Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thanks for listening to Creative Control. While I have you here, please consider supporting Youth Empowerment and Support Services, otherwise known as YES. Based in Edmonton, Alberta, YES provides immediate and low-barrier overnight and day shelter, temporary supportive housing, and individualized wraparound supports for young people aged 15 to 24. They work collaboratively within a network of care focused on the prevention of youth homelessness by providing youth with the necessary supports to stabilize their housing, improve their well-being, build life skills, connect with community, and avoid re-entry into homelessness. Learn more about how to donate or otherwise support YES by visiting yess.org.
This is Dmitry Samarov from Chicago, Illinois. And I love listening to Vish Khanna's Creative Control because whether he's talking to a favorite musician or actor of mine or someone I've never heard of, it's as if he's introducing me to a new friend. And the way things are going, couldn't you use a new friend? Listen now.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Simone Schmidt and Ian Russell are each musicians and songwriters who once called Toronto, Ontario home. Known for their recent and acclaimed works as Fiverr, Schmidt has also played in bands like The Highest Order, which followed their time in $100, an artfully outspoken country band they formed with Russell in 2006. Sometime in May of 2023, Blue Fog Recordings reissued Forest of Tears, the remarkable debut album by $100, which was originally released on August 1st, 2008, and had been out of print for some time. To celebrate the occasion, I invited Simone and Ian onto this show to have a discussion about things like different listening speeds, our long history of doing interviews and hanging out together over the past 15 years, how $100 came together and wound up making a record with Rick White, what Toronto music communities were like when the band formed, and how country music was viewed at the time, vinyl reissues and the ways music is consumed and regarded these days, when Ian was ill with leukemia and his recovery, Simone's serious anti-poverty work, and the music people she used to encounter in Toronto who seemed to party a lot, the mysterious band LS Double D Cup, representation in music, being ahead of your time, and evolving socio-political perspectives, Ian's solo album In Light, upcoming Fiverr plans, and much, much more. A part of the Entertainment One network with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this donor-driven podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol. That is the primary source of revenue for all the work that goes into this podcast every week, and it's the cleanest of the money that comes in. So thank you to everyone who takes time to head over to patreon.com /creativecontrol and make a donation to sustain my work with this podcast. I can't thank you enough. Plus, in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 787 of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented Simone Schmidt and Ian Russell of $100, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Yeah, that's what they meant when they say careless love, careless love, careless love. Hey, Simone, how's it going?
It's going great. I'm glad to talk to you again.
Yeah, me too. It's nice to see you. I understand that you sometimes partake of my show, but you listen at a different speed. Is that correct?
Yeah, like 1.75.
1.75 speed. So for those who don't understand, you can vary speed a podcast and you listen to me faster. Is that correct?
Yeah, yeah. You sound great like that.
Why is that? Now, why do you need to listen? Why can't? So here's the thing. I spend a lot of time trying to make things sound good and my guests sound good. I edit out stammering and awkwardness and as much as I can. I'm involved. It's going to be awkward. There's no doubt. However, then I hear tell that people like you are listening at like top speed. Why does it help you to listen to a podcast where people are talking at top speed?
There's just a lot of pausing that people do, which I will also do. But if I have to listen back to a podcast that I've done, I listen to it at 1.752. It works, you know? It happens faster. And I will say that because this is a really conversational podcast, people aren't being like particularly succinct or like choosy with their words or brilliant. Most of the time. And so you really don't have to, like, it doesn't have to be like as long as it takes everyone to say. Like, this sentence is taking a long time. Maybe the folks at home can try listening to me speak at 1.75 and they'll find that it's actually like a lot easier to just like graze over what I'm saying, you know?
Well, okay. I appreciate this, but I heartily disagree. I think people on my show are quite brilliant and saying cool things. The other weird thing about this is, like, you and I don't talk on the phone nearly as much as we used to, I don't think, or in
person.
They're
saying cool things. They're saying cool things, and I'm sorry to interrupt. Everyone's saying cool things, but they're not saying them in ways that are, like, particularly dense.
Okay, I see.
Because people are coming to their meaning as they're speaking.
In real time.
Yeah.
I understand. So I had a conversation with a mutual friend of ours on the telephone about a month ago, and they also listened to the show on a regular basis. And at one point I noticed they were acting a bit oddly with me.
Yeah.
And I was like, what's going on? Like, it's just, I usually listen to you at 2x speed. You're talking too slow. You're talking too slow. I can't deal with this. It's freaking me out. I'm like, I'm freaking you out? Like, how fast do you expect me to talk as a normal person? And so, are you freaked out right now just talking to me normally, like hearing my voice normally?
No, not at all. I'm familiar, you know?
Okay. All right. Well, it's lovely, as always, to speak with you. It's been too long since you've been on the show. So thank you for making time. We are joined by a very special guest. Simone, usually it's just you and me. But joining us, I believe, I see them. Ian, are you there?
Yes. Oh, yes, I am. I'm right here.
It's nice to have you.
Keep it quick here.
No, don't, please don't. That's going to be like 3x speed. If you talk like Eminem or if you rap.
It's, Micro Machines.
Micro Machine Man. Yeah, don't do that. Don't do that. Just talk at your normal pace. Simone and their ilk will take care of the speed after this episode is out. Now, Ian, it's nice to have you on this show. We used to talk more frequently in the sort of interview subject capacity. I think that's a fair assessment. Is that correct?
Yes, we did.
Did I interview you a lot?
Well, you've definitely interviewed as $100 for sure. Didn't we do a breakfast thing once?
Yeah, I used to do work for the CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, ironically based in Canada, and I used to go out and have breakfast with bands.
Yeah.
But I would also do other interviews. Oh. And, I mean, Ian, not for nothing, the first time I ever wrote a cover story for Exclaim magazine, it was about John Ray and the River.
Oh, yeah. I saw that at my mom's house last time I was there. She had it now, in the laundry room.
Did you? In the laundry room? Like lining the cat litter or something?
I guess no. She just kept it being like, you got to see this. But yeah.
Now, did you reread the article by chance? Did you ever read the article?
No, but I will. Next time I'm home with getting my hair cut by my mom, I'll pull that exclaim out and read it.
I will say, I haven't revisited it in a long time. I was very proud of what I did there, and I was told repeatedly that it was actually one of the better cover stories at the time. I'm not trying to sound immodest. Actually, here's the thing. Someone, sometime after it came out, someone at Queen's University messaged me to say they used it as a model for their journalism students. I'm like, what the hell? That seems unusual. But anyway,
wow.
Toot my own horn
for our success. Some of our success.
No, I don't know. It was whatever. I don't mean to toot my own horn, but it was, that's like maybe the first time we did an interview is all I was getting at. So anyway,
yeah, I guess it would have been.
I don't think you've been on this show, right? The podcast?
I don't think so, but I am a listener of it at normal speed.
You listen at normal speed. That's
Yeah, I do.
I just listen to it at a really low volume just so it feels like there's people around, but they're
low volume, high speed. Why can't anyone just listen to what I'm doing in a normal way? Low volume. Anyway, it's very nice to have you. Now, Ian and Simone, I encountered you many, many years ago, as we've established. Simone, I may have encountered you without Ian when I lived in Guelph, Ontario, and you did. Was Ian with you at that time? I don't remember.
No.
Okay.
I didn't even know who Ian was.
I was just a speck of nothingness.
No, no, don't say that. Don't say that. It's not like you're my podcast and it's speck of nothingness. That's how I feel now about my show. Never mind. No, so yeah, Simone and I guess I've known longer. And Simone I used to know from playing in a band. At least I saw one performance. What were they called? Shit on the President's Door?
Yeah. Yeah, that was the band name. I forgot.
I remember things, unfortunately or fortunately. I have a memory, and I remember
you were in a band called the Neutron Stars.
That's correct. Yeah, and I think we shared the bill that day.
Yeah,
that was like a pop rock band. Anyway, so I've known Simone a long time. Ian, I've known you a long time in a way, but you two used to be thick as thieves, and I've heard tell recently that this is a bit of a reunion. You haven't spoken, Ian and Simone, in some time. Ian, is this true? Is this a fallacy? I can't determine that yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we haven't spoken like this in a long time. On a Zoom call.
On a call? We'll just plug the company. Fine. We haven't spoken in a web interface. Simone, what would be the reason for you and Ian not to have had a dialogue in some time?
You know what? We just got really caught up in our different lives.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I think we got a lot of the work we needed to get done. And then it's just been about a decade, and we just haven't spoken since then.
Yeah, literally haven't spoken. It's as we're speaking, for everyone wondering, it's 2023. Simone is suggesting that they and Ian have not spoken in a decade. I find this hard to believe. Ian, is that accurate? What Simone just said?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
100%.
All right. So
So Simone, how's it going?
It's cool. It's great. Yeah, it's great to hear your voice.
Now, are there hard feelings? Like, why have you not spoken in 10 years? Ian, I direct that at you. Do you have any insight
just
there?
Busy. You know.
Yeah.
Rushing from one thing to the next.
Like, but you were extremely good friends at one point. You were very close, right?
Yeah, well, we did a lot together.
Simone, for those who can't see us, Simone definitively said yes. Ian kind of shrugged a little, did the kind of back and forth with their head, and not sure really. Okay, so maybe not as close as we all perceive. Is there a reason we would have thought those on the outside of $100, your band that we're here to ostensibly talk about? Is there a reason why we would have thought you were closer than you actually were, Ian? Is it all just the marketing?
We just put on a good show. Yeah. We made it look like we were close. We devised this whole backstory.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I can't help but say I'm feeling very sentimental about this conversation because I enjoyed seeing you two hanging out and playing music and watching the band evolve. Simone, is it fair to say I caught wind of this band in its earliest days on some level? I feel like I was talking about it and covering it for various things kind of early. Is that your memory?
I don't have that much of a memory of back then, but I like you were one of the only journalists who paid attention to what we were doing for sure. Mm-hmm. And like early on, I think that that was the case for sure.
Yeah, I feel like you sent it to me, the initial music early. That's the only reason why I had that luck to be able to like, holy shit, this band is great. Or this, I think you were a duo at that time. Is that possible?
Yeah, our first thing we made was like in 2007, I think. It was an EP called Hold It Together.
Yeah.
And yeah, we like made it because we were going to go play Sappy Fest. Mm-hmm. And we like hand silk screened the covers and we recorded it on an 8-track recorder at your house, Ian.
Yeah.
I think. And, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so that's
A nice cover.
Can you corroborate what Simone just said, Ian? Is that about right?
Everything they said is 100% true.
Okay, because they said that they don't have a memory. I read Simone, you wrote a thing on one of the social media platforms just describing this re-release and jogging your memory, and you mentioned you don't have much of a memory for it, and I want to bookmark that and ask maybe what that means in a second. But Ian, you're saying everything checks out, that this is your memory. Your memory is clear, crystal clear. It hasn't been 10 years of darkness, a decade of darkness. You remember everything about what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Kind of.
Okay.
I vaguely remember everything.
Okay. This is going to be great because we're doing a bit of a memory jog. We have new stuff to talk about too, but this is going to be fantastic. So Simone, can you expand upon your assertion that you don't quite remember everything from this time period? For those who can't see it, I'm going to hold it up. This is the record we're ostensibly here to talk about. Mine came in the mail not too long ago. It's called Forest of Tears, a wonderful album by $100, recorded by Rick White. Simone, do you have a sense of why you don't remember so much about this period? Is there any particular reason?
No, like, I mean, for me, it was just interesting because I had to go through the exercise of, like, there's a reissue of the record, and Brian Taylor and Rick White, who run Blue Fog Recordings, were like, we're going to reprint it, because it was always a pretty small run that they did. And so they asked me to write something, and I put it to the band, like, we could all write something. I wrote by email because I don't talk to any of them verbally, is what I'm saying.
Hmm.
So I wrote to everyone, and I said, like, would you guys like to write? And no one wanted to, and so they left it to me. And then I was, like, genuinely trying to remember, like, what happened. Yeah. What was that day like? And what's interesting about a record like that is that because we did a bunch of press about it, we would talk about it. And so I remembered what we said we did. But I actually had no real memories of the time. Which calls into question, like, what is a memory?
Mm.
And how do we remember things? And so the closest thing that I could think about, like, is that actually a lot of my life I don't have that many memories that aren't, like, prompted by photos or recordings. And that song is a really interesting technology, I guess, for remembering, because it has all this information in it. And so that's kind of what I have from a lot of periods of my life where my memory's not so sharp. For whatever reason, like, I end up having these songs and then sometimes recordings of them, and I can more accurately, like, remember why I was writing something or why I chose a certain word or why that subject was important to me to write about, you know?
Yeah.
Because they're also not like they don't tend to be like about my real life all that much, you know?
So yeah.
It's interesting. It's cool. But yeah, I had one memory of the time that we went to Rick and Brian's, and it was like a visceral memory of their washroom. And I like loved their washroom. They had like a little stained glass in it.
Hmm.
And I that's what I remember of that time. But what do you remember anything, Ian? Sorry, I'm not interviewing you.
No, you can. You take over. I want a break. I do this all the time. No, Ian, do you remember things about that day at the Elder Schoolhouse, I believe is the name of the space?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I remember being really psyched to go up there, and we went up with a bunch of us, the whole band, with Dave Clark, Jonathan Ajemian, Stu Crooks, Paul Mortimer, and the us two. And I remember the strongest memory for real is just eating these big steaks that we bought after, like after doing the whole day of recording, which we were so proud of ourselves to get these, like, what was it, 11 songs all done. Does this sound like I'm talking like the press releases or like talking like we were back then, Sloan, being like, we did these 11 songs in 14 hours. Like something like that. We always went over that. But yeah, I remember being really proud of ourselves at the end of it. And I remember eating those gigantic steaks at 1 a.m. and not being able to go to sleep, just being so psyched that we pulled it off, or we thought we pulled it off. It felt good. And then we just ate these giant steaks. And everyone was going crashing. And I said, I couldn't crash. I had to go for a walk and do something to walk off this buzz and these big steaks. And I went outside and it was so dark. And it was just terrifying, like walking around the roads in that area, just with nothing, like no stars, yeah. Nothing. And me just convincing myself, being like kind of hard headed, being like, I'm going to go for a walk. This is the best thing. And just getting terrified. And then coming back in, crawling on the floor and sleeping, trying to sleep while with everyone else sleeping there too. Sleeping on floors.
Yeah, their house is just kind of in the middle of nowhere. There's nothing but like farms around them, right? So, and literally, mm-hmm. I think a dirt road. So, yeah, brave of you on some level, Ian, mm-hmm. to be full of steaks and make such a mistake. But it worked out for you.
Yeah. It worked out.
You're both touching upon, so yeah, there's a bit of memory jogging involved in discussing something that happened so long ago, but I think Simone in particular, you're talking about how artifacts can actually distort the memory of the experience, right? So mm-hmm. you're looking maybe potentially at an article, you know, Ian joking about press releases and what you would have said to the press at the time. But you do that enough times, or you revisit a photograph, or you revisit the song you wrote when you were younger, and you might think, well, that's who I really was. That must be. This is the only evidence I have of who I was at that time. Simone, as you ponder these, my eyes are starting to go, I'll tell you that. And I was looking at the small print here, and I should have listened to my optometrist and got progressive. That's what the one thought I had today. So I'm like, what the fuck? I can't read this shit. And then I squinted and I could read it. And I was like, oh, yeah, Simone and Ian, already fantastic songwriters, almost out of the gate. Just brilliant storytelling and hard, hard songs, I will say. They don't pussyfoot around. They don't compromise. But Simone, in rethinking about, I assume when someone says we want to repress something that you made, you know, how long ago has it been now? You said, what'd you say, 2007? No, 2008? Something like that?
Yeah, 2008.
Yeah. 2008.
So when someone says we want to put something out that you made 15 years ago, or whatever it was, I assume you want to revisit it to make sure you still believe and stand by who you were at the time on some level. Is that fair? Did you go through the album and think, no. like, you know, no. not at all?
No. I know all those songs, like, in myself. So I wasn't, like, I wasn't worried about that. We recorded that song... Or all those songs, and then we played them all the time. So, like, I just know them. Like, I can recite them all mm-hmm. and can sing them. So, like, I wouldn't make a lot of the choices that I made on that album now. I wouldn't sing the way that I sang then. I have, like, been playing music for 15 years, so I'm a much better musician now. And I don't write in that form anymore. Like, it feels like reading like an essay that you wrote in like grade 10 or something to me in a way, not because like I can't get behind the material, but I just like I wouldn't do things in that way. Like my cadence is like so like compressed, you know. It's like mm-hmm. the way I'm like fitting into country form requires a kind of resolve in a lot of those songs that I like fundamentally don't believe in anymore. Like I can't access that kind of resolve in my life, you know. You got like a verse and a chorus and a verse and a chorus, maybe a bridge and then a verse and a chorus, and then like if it's a good song then the chorus like shows itself to be something even more by the end, or like it turns on itself. And that's like a really like tried and true country form. And it also like requires to like a story to flow in a certain way. Like the form does dictate the content to a degree, and I just like haven't really had that experience of time or of like drama in my life. So I guess it's not like a way I'm compelled to write anymore, or like a place where I find much like honesty, if that makes sense. So in that sense, it like ends up like I don't think I would ever undertake the telling of like a big story anymore. Like I just like sing about moments or imagine a moment or like an idea. So yeah, I think in that way it's like it's really cool to see like what I associate that like simplicity or like naiveness with like being a young person or and not having had any of the experiences that I had. And like I think because that approach is so different, I don't feel like quite attached to it, and I like also kind of don't care if it like stands the test of time. Like I'm just like, oh, that was that moment.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
It does. I think as I recall, you were an early I feel like one of your early impulses, Simone in particular, was to be a champion for country music, like to remind people of the strength of it and the depth of it beyond whatever the conception was at the time. Is that a fair way of putting it?
Yeah, like people hated country music when we were playing country music for the most part. Like like you'd be like, what kind of music do you like? And people would be like, everything but country. Right, Ian?
Yeah, right. Totally.
So all I'm getting at is for a debut album, and I want to go to Ian about your thoughts and memories as you... whether or not you revisited this material before it came out again, just to get your thoughts and reflections the way Simone just put them. But just to finish this thought, I feel like this was a statement to us to potentially, whether you thought of it this way or not, Simone, to establish yourself as a young artist. And I can see the care that's gone into that with the attention to detail to the lyrics and whatever you might think of your singing at this point. I mean,
I'm going to interrupt you because, like, we weren't actually thinking that way at all.
Good.
Like, I don't think we were really thinking that way. Like, I think we got the opportunity to record with Rick out of nowhere.
Okay.
And then we made it happen. But we were just, like, meticulous in our way that we would write, right? Like, we just, we just wanted it to be good because we wanted to be doing something that we thought was good. And it was a lot less, like, for... like independent artists, there's a lot less of like a notion that you would become like famous. Like you didn't have to do social media, so you weren't like competing on the same platforms as like Beyonce or something. So you know what I mean? Like it, we were just like, we're going to make something good. I don't know. Ian, what do you think?
Yeah. Well, yeah, we were like so into country music and country songwriting, and we just were like studying or whatever you could say, but like listening and enjoying and digging country songwriting. And so we're into that work of doing that. Like, that was the reason why we made the songs. We just were into that style of music, the songwriting, the country songs. And that's how it, I mean, most of it's country like that, in that way, like songs and stories. Yeah, so I think that's how we're going for.
I appreciate the clarification about intentionality here. I guess where I'm coming from is when I think of myself as a young person and the sort of musical forms or communities I tried to enter by playing, I think you're right. We probably weren't thinking about what it all meant. But on some level, we had such gratitude for what we had experienced and heard from others. When we entered the forum, we wanted to throw down 100%. We wanted to be there.
Yeah.
And present something that we could be proud of and that we felt respected the forms. Whether we're going to do whatever we're going to do, and it's going to be our own thing. It's not going to, we weren't copying anyone or anything like that. And I don't think you were either. But when you enter any kind of genre oriented community, for me, it was like post hardcore, punk, and whatever those things mean. Those are, to me, I maintain those are open ended concepts. I think of punk as being almost anything. But I think that when we entered them, we came with a little bit. We were young. We probably didn't think about it too much, but hat in hand a little bit. Please, we want to contribute to this. We think we have something that will also contribute to this, what everyone's doing, and we hope that it doesn't embarrass it, or we hope it does it justice. So what I'm getting at is, I just wanted to clarify. Simone, is what I'm saying sort of making sense to you Yeah, more fully. So in the vein of like you clearly felt country music was being misinterpreted on some level by indie rock idiots or whatever you want to call it. And that was kind of the milieu you were in on some level, right? Those were your peers, maybe.
No, I think those were Ian's peers. Like, I wasn't a musician until we started doing $100. So I would go watch John Ray and the River play and think, like, okay. Like, I guess I remember going to shows and, like, throwing shows with this Punch Clock, which is, like, the print collective that I was into. And we would, you know, like, what, Creeping Nobodies, like, all this kind of indie rock. So that was, like, the social milieu, but in a way, I guess I don't remember like when we began writing together that I had much of an aspiration to like be part of it or to interject into it or anything like that. It just was the place that we had access because those were like the social channels that we had access to play in a sense. Like, and and I guess when I say like people weren't playing country music, it was like that, like even like, what, the folk musicians that would have been popular at the time would have been like Will Oldham, you know, people would have been listening to him. But that wasn't really what was happening in Toronto, as I remember. There wasn't that much like even sad boy folk music or anything like that. Not to say Will Oldham is sad boy folk, but you know what I mean? Like the things that... But yeah, I don't know. How do you remember it, Ian? Like what was the community of musicians that we were in?
Like when I was thinking about when I listened to the record for the first time so long, and so many memories came back that time. I was like amazed, remembering so much. And since then, something that's come from it is I just remember so much. My life was all about bands, like playing in bands, going to shows every night if you could, and just living and breathing that. So everyone around you is in music and making music. Or me was making music around me and around us. And so that was what we knew. And of course we wanted to do something, you know, contribute to the general stuff that's going on. But for us, that's just something that comes to mind. Just how much that was the way of life.
When you listen back on it, so Simone mentioned that when they listen back to it, on some level they don't have that many regrets on some level. They can hear things they would have done differently, maybe, but there were no hang-ups, is what I gathered from the previous response. Ian, this is also a time and place for you, this album. You know, it captures captures who you were at that time. What do you hear when you listen back? What do you hear about yourself, rather, when you listen back to this record and $100?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I think of us, like Simone and I, and then Simone Stewart and then the band. All of us, it reminds me of, I have a million memories that are all just swimming around at once, really. It's hard to land on one and define one. But, you know, all the years of touring and so many fun shows. But yeah, when we were first starting, I felt like everyone around us, there was like superstars everywhere. I was just kind of amazed by all the talent. I felt like everybody was so special and vibrant. And yeah, it was such a exciting time. And yeah, I think... meeting, you know, Simone and I got started writing music, and I was quickly amazed with what we could do. I mean, my part was just the music, but Simone's lyrics and singing was just, you know, the superstar right beside me, being like, "Hell, we could write this amazing stuff." I was so happy.
So, you, among other things,
very happy.
Among other memories for you is the revelation, I guess.
Yeah. Well, yeah, when the first, like, Careless Love is the first song in this record, and it was the first one on that first EP, right, Simone? Yeah. And I still think that's a great song.
It's fantastic, like, and it's...
I'd love to hear Dolly Parton record that one. Remember, Simone, you were saying, I want someone to get us some money for all this?
Yeah, that was...
I feel like it would be awesome.
That was part of the recent, at least it was at least a part of the recent post that I was alluding to earlier, where Simone. Right. So I mean, we're a little all over the place because I don't know if we've. I keep meaning to ask. You know, Simone earlier, Ian described himself as a speck of dust, and that you didn't. You know, you didn't know each other when Simone and I were in Guelph together, hadn't yet established contact. Simone and Ian hadn't established contact yet. I want to get to kind of that origin story a little bit in terms of your collaboration, but what Ian just said begs the question of why a repress? Exactly. Like, what is the point of this on the one hand? Mm-hmm. It's happening a lot now, and certainly Brian and Rick
are... It's not on the internet. Like, it's not on streaming services. So, like, yeah. People don't know that it exists, like, and then the people who do know that it exists are like, I haven't been able to find that music in years, or like, people would write me and be like, my CD's worn out, can you get me another CD? And I'd be like, I don't know. Like, I don't know how to do that. So there was like an actual demand for it, which was pretty cool. And then over the years, I kind of like, I think like even a few, like a month ago, like Brian, who works at Rotate This, was like, I like, here's like a $100 Source of Tears LP coming through. And then I just posted it on the internet and like people were like, ah, like scrambling to get it. And then, but then there was a repress of it. So it's really funny. But I thought that like, that's so cool because there's been the scarcity of that recording. And whereas like every other album you can just like listen to for free, you kind of have to get this one. You can now listen to it on Bandcamp, but it's not on streaming services.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad we did that. We didn't put it up, you know?
Why are you glad?
Just because it's like, I think that it really lends to this experience of people having listened to it in the past and then like getting to return to it. And maybe something that I've been thinking about lately is like the difference between nostalgia and like just the impact of songs that remain with you in certain ways. Mm-hmm. And just the total lack of attention that people pay to music right now as it's accessible constantly means that like that's often the way that like new music I put out is consumed. And so like I know when I put out a record, like people might not even listen to it all the way through, and they don't need to. If they don't like it the first time, they don't need to hear it again. And so that just means that that quality of attention that used to be around like, you know, 15, 16 years ago when people would get an album and they'd play it over and over again doesn't exist. And I think it's so cool that it like that means that the music's like emblazoned in people's minds and then they really like get to receive it again in that same format. Mm-hmm. They have to listen to at least one side of it unless they're super weird and they're just going to keep moving the needle, you know? So I really like that about it.
Yeah, my family and I have been obsessed with an album that somebody put out recently, and they only put it out on Bandcamp. And so when I'm around, we can play it because it's on. I bought it, and then I put it on my telephone. And then when we're in the minivan or when I'm making breakfast or whatever, dinner, I can zap it to the speakers. That's it. It's not on vinyl. It's nowhere else. But my kids are like, can we add it to our machines? I'm like, no, I guess you can, unless I bring my, I could, if you want, I can bring my zip drive up, but they're all private. They're like, no, you don't have to come into our room, Papa. It's okay. Don't worry about it. We're fine. I'll just listen with you. But anyway, I'm sensing that there's this movement now by bands who are able to be like, I'm just putting it out on Bandcamp. I'm not going to put it on the big streaming services. Do you see a future in this, Simone? Like, do you think that's going to keep happening maybe?
Oh, I don't know how people are going to try to make money off music or try to release music. You know, it all feels so messed. I can swear it feels so fucked up because it's like you don't want your sacred practice to like be doing business for an arms dealer. Like that's the reality. I don't really feel like I want the Spotify guy to be making money off of my work. When I don't, especially, but the other aspect just being like the notion that there's like unlimited digital room in the world when like really like the servers are finite and like they're really hot and there's global warming and I don't know, like these like dependencies on like digital technology and everything always being there and always being connected, it doesn't feel very good to be maybe like part of this like general glue.
Yeah.
You know? And so for me, that's why I would look for other ways. But, you know, I hope like Bandcamp, like they're trying to unionize and like I hope all that's working out well and like if everyone's getting treated good there, then I feel like they've always tried to make, like, let artists make money off yep. our work. And so, mm-hmm. so I would, you know, I would consider doing it. There's this notion at the beginning of, like, when streaming started, like, if you don't throw your music into the stream, then, like, if you're not on Spotify, you're not on Apple, then, like, no one's ever going to be able to figure out who you are. And, like, for, like, every 2 years, there'd be, like, a different, like, theory of industry. Like, how are we going to keep making money? Like, what do you need to do in order to remain relevant? And I think, like, ultimately, I just feel like musicians got duped in a lot of ways. And I think I can probably still make the money I can make doing what I've always done, which is, like, to have a modest following and tour and play those shows and then, like, sell those records off stage.
Yeah.
Otherwise, like, and then, like, what? Like, get a show in television or something? Or a song
in television. Like a licensing sync or whatever? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or get, like, Dolly Parton to cover Careless Love. So
if we keep saying it, it'll happen. If we keep saying that Dolly Parton, in particular, should cover the song Careless Love, it'll happen. It's like Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
So we'll just keep saying it. Ian, thanks for that, Simone. I appreciate that. And I know it's both relevant and not relevant to maybe... Well, I guess it's relevant to the release of this record. Thank you for speaking to that. Because I think it's a little bit of an industry thing, too. I really am... I don't know about you two, but I'm trying to collect all of these Blue Fog record re-releases or repressings or pressings, frankly, of things that are long ago because I appreciate what they're doing. It means it's meaningful to me. So I'm happy that this exists in this format. I will say, Ian, I was recently, I guess it was a few months ago, we had some family over. And when I lived in Guelph, the family members would marvel at the wall of CDs that my wife and I have accumulated. And I was never particularly proud of it. They just had to be in the living room. That was the only room that could house them. But it was pretty like, holy shit, that's a lot of CDs. And so then the same family members came to my house in Edmonton and we did a tour of the house. And they were like, so you got rid of the CDs? I was like, no. No. So we went to this closet thing in the basement and there they are. And they're like, you kept them? I'm like, from like 1999 to maybe 2012, there are CDs here that bands made and they're nowhere else. There's on, like, I don't know. You're right, Simone. Some of my CDs don't work. What we heard in the time is like, this is an inherently obsolete format. It's not going to work after a while. Yeah. It just doesn't work. The data just isn't read. But I have them, and for the most part, I hope they work. So all I'm getting at is, sorry, Ian, I cut you off. I was going to ask you a question. I'm just saying, I related to that. I think it's important to keep physical things. And I think that's a really weird... You guys fall in that category. You made a CD, and I thought I had it on vinyl. I was like, I don't need to buy that. Turns out I don't. I didn't have $100 on vinyl. I had it on the compact disc. Huh. So I felt... Mm-hmm. I'm glad I got it. Anyway, I just wanted to say that. I think there's something to that, to keeping things. Where was I going with this? I had a question for you, Ian, didn't I? Did I say something?
Yeah. You said you had a question for me.
I did, a while ago.
Ask the question.
Can we get to how you became a meaningless speck of dust in Simone Schmidt's life to starting to collaborate together as actual songwriters? How did that happen?
Well... I wasn't a meaningless speck of dust before I met Simone, but
I didn't think so. I didn't think so.
For this podcast.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, for the story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not meaningless.
I didn't say, I didn't mean it. I don't think you're meaningless. I was just doing a callback to the speck of dust comment. I think you, again, to me, you're the opposite. You were one of the first people I got to interview for a cover story for a major, at the time, it seemed to me anyway. A major magazine in Canada, the one I read as a kid, and then they say, "Okay, you're up. Let's see what you got. Write a cover story on this John Ray and the River, since you like him so much." You were there, right. So you're not. You were never meaningless to me. You understand? I just want to say that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Same here. I mattered to myself. I was a matter that mattered.
You always have been. Anyway, let's. I think we've regressed. My point is, how did you and Simone start working together in this band?
Oh, well, we met and started hanging out, and I actually talking with my partner about doing this interview, was saying, Simone, how I remember the first time hearing you sing at the piano at the house I lived at on MacDonnell. And you played a song and sang it. And I think it was, what's Michelle McAdory's band's name?
Crash Vegas.
And it was like, she calls early in the morning about money.
That's Sarah Harmer.
Sarah Harmer.
That was like Weeping Tile.
Oh, Weeping Tile.
That's
right.
a Weeping Tile.
Two bands that I heard at the same time and get them mixed up. Anyways, that was the first time I heard you sing. And I remember being like, oh my God, this is so cool. And I was like, you can really sing. And was psyched because I could play music with you and wanted to do that. And you really took it from there, I guess. I mean, we took it from there together, but that's how it, that was, for me, that was something I was like, that was a big moment.
I see. Okay. So that is how you first knew of Simone's gifts, and then collaborating began. How exactly? Ian.
Probably saying, let's write a song. San Andreas Fault. That was the first song we wrote, Simone? Do you remember that one?
Yeah. But remember, I would play the mandolin. I could play the mandolin.
Yeah.
So I kind of would play a bit with that. Like, I couldn't play well by any means. My tone is wretched, but yeah.
But yeah, you would sing song. Like, I think for that San Andreas Fault and probably for Careless Love, you sang it. And then together we just kind of figured out the music, the chords that would be underneath it. And most of the songs were probably came about like that. There's some maybe where I started with some music and you brought some words to it, but I don't know.
Like, you would do that a lot. I think you did that a lot, like, because if not like chord structure, like so many like particular turns, but also like you had like a, where other people like wouldn't use minors, you would like throw in like a minor a lot of the time, like in country music, and like you often were like writing sort of like standalone instrumentals. And so it was like such a rich, like musical chord structure to write to. And I remember just being like, oh, I feel really lucky about that. Hmm.
And then, Ian, at some point, so as I've established many times, you were in a band called John Ray and the River. That band ceased operations, right?
Yep. It stopped around the same time I got diagnosed with leukemia, or definitely. Well, we stopped then, I think.
How are you doing, Ian? How are you doing?
Oh, I'm perfectly fine. Okay, yeah, good. Thanks. Yeah. I'm fine. I mean, there's like, what's it called when something that wasn't intended?
Iatrogenic?
Happened? Oh, not that. I don't know what that word is. What was that?
Iatrogenic.
Oh, I don't know what that is. What is that?
That's like when like a treatment like causes you an illness.
Yeah.
Like you get administered a cure and then you get sick from the cure in a different way.
Were you thinking of the word relapse by chance or something?
No. Email me that word, Simone, but it's the, because that's what it is. It's like, yeah, I've got, things have come from it, from doing chemo. Like, chemo's like bring someone to the brink of death, hoping that you kill the cancer and then not kill the patient and then bring them back and hope that they're, okay, and I'm mostly okay. But there's things like my bones are like a bit fucked up.
Yeah.
But mostly I'm okay.
I'm brought back to being deeply concerned about you on a personal level that whole time. So I'm just very grateful. I'm sorry you two haven't talked in 10 years. That seems sad, but I'm very grateful we're all here today. And that you're here today, it means a lot to me to see you, because I am brought... Sorry, there's some painful memories involved for me with this band, but it's mostly to do with that. Just knowing that you were... And Simone struggling through it, too. Like, we would have frank conversations about this, as I recall, of Simone trying to take care of you and all that sort of stuff. So, anyway, don't want to make it
cancer a... Cancer's the easy part.
What I was trying to get to...
No way.
Oh my God. Sorry. I'm glad this. We can laugh about it now, I guess. But it was tough.
Funny.
I will say, even not knowing you as well as... I don't know. I just feel like we did hang out quite a bit in those times, if I may say. It just, I can't remember them all, but does that ring true? Yeah. Am I making that up? I feel like we were often around each other. at least the three
me
of
too.
Us.
Me too. I felt like the three of us and like so many people, like yeah. it was just like hanging out all the time and lots of people. And I think so many people who are going to, like, who's going to buy this record, this 2008 record now? I bet so many people are people who were there like in that time. Yeah. Cause that was a big time for us, for me, Simone and you, Vish. But then other people, like I talked to people and like, they're saying that was such an important time for me. And for people of certain times in their life, that's like when you're, you know, it's big moments in your life. So it's like,
yeah,
I'm curious. I'd love to be able to get like the stats on how many people are buying Forest of Tears this year, who had been to the shows or got it, you know, recommended by a dear friend or heard a song on a mixed CD or whatever playlist, I guess it is now, but
well,
or how many people are just coming to it. Like, how would you come to this? How could you hear about this?
Well, we were all, it was such a formative time for all of us. I'm guessing you guys were in your mid to late 20s. I was in my late 20s to early 30s. And yeah, for me personally, like this coincides with me getting probably the best job I ever had for the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, where I actually got to do creative things and go have breakfast with you or talk to people. And so it is like a really magical time that I'm brought back to by, I think I probably profiled your album on that network, you know, and we talked about it, and
yeah,
like it's a very magical thing. So there's going to be some inherent nostalgia here. I'm glad we talked about the content of the record still kind of holding up for both of you. Where I was going there before we got a little bit sad or melancholy, but it's all worked out fine. Ian is good and here, and I'm so pleased about that. But yeah, so John Ray and the River stops, and then that band becomes $100, and you do a bunch of. Is that not quite? Well, not everyone.
Say that, because
no.
It's like,
no.
John Ray and the River was its own thing for sure, and very different vibes. Okay. And it was like this powerful, amazing drunk punk band that was its own thing. But then Simone and I were very, had a very different, idea. Like, I don't think we came with like, we're going to do a band that does this. It was just this, we were doing songs and writing songs, and it was very different. Also because we're coming out of.
Sorry.
Yeah. No. I don't need to apologize.
Some of the members is what I should have said of that band ended up
for sure.
Being in,
yeah, because like Anne was in John Ray and the River, and John Ray was in John Ray and the River, and neither of those people were in the band that we were in.
Right.
The people who were in it was like Paul Mortimer, Jonathan Ajemian, and David Clark.
And then Stu.
And then, but also really, really important in our band was Stu, and he wasn't in John Ray.
Okay,
the River.
Right. Fair enough.
And it was,
fair enough.
It felt like it was a different time. Too, for my like the scene that I was in, for sure, the scene that we were in, it was like I got cancer and I felt like there was a reckoning for some people at least, and it was just we just kind of approached it differently for sure.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Okay, I don't even know what I was getting at. I just wanted to kind of give people who weren't there a sense of how you two started to come together. And
well, yeah, like because I wasn't really a musician and. Or, like, I could play music, but I wasn't, like, into bands like Ian was. Mm-hmm. And I just, like, started hanging out around Ian because I worked in this print shop and was in the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty, which were, like, other groups, like Punch Clock, Print Collective, and then OCAP. And Ian had, like, relationship to all those groups in some way. And so when I started hanging out around Ian, I was like, whoa, you go to so many shows. And all these people, all they do is get drunk and play music. And like, wow, like what a nice life. Like these people are so relaxed. Like everywhere I am, like people are suffering or like trying. And then there were all these like partiers and they were like involved in this cultural scene that like had nothing to do with the culture I was part of. So I felt like very outside of the thing. And I mostly like kind of watched Ian. And when we would hang out, like I would sometimes go to play shows out of like to watch them play shows out of town or like watch Ian go on tour, and I was always just kind of like what like weird, like so it what to me it wasn't like really the culture that I was like aspiring to, but I did print shirts for John Ray and the River as a printer, as a screen printer, and yeah, so to me it was like very foreign. And then Ian and I, we would play as a duet and it was really cool, and we would play at the Transat Club, and this guy, Stu Crooks, who's a pedal steel player, saw us play. And he was like, I'll play with you guys. So that seemed impossible. Mm. And Ian was also in a band called Live Country Music with Chuck Ehrlichman, who's still making music, which is so cool. And like Doug Paisley and Matt Barber. And so they, like, we would go watch them play, and they were more kind of like the country, like older country listening crowd. And then, so yeah, I think that's how Stu kind of came to know who Ian was. But when we got the opportunity to make this album, it was out of nowhere. Like, we weren't seeking to make the full length. It was just more that, like, we played a show with Rick White, and then he offered to record the record. So we were like, who's going to play on the record? And we really quickly just, like, reached for the people that, like, Ian trusted most as a musician, because he knew what he was doing. Like, I was like, I don't even know what a microphone is in some ways, you know? I didn't know how bands and recordings worked at all at the time. So, yeah, I think, like, Ian's relationships and, like, commitment and, like, dedication to, like, fostering musical culture, like I didn't have to work for that entryway into it at all. I just, like, found myself there. And I don't think I noticed, like, I didn't even know that until, like, years later when I watched, when I realized how easy it was for me to enter into that. So thank you, Ian.
Oh, man.
Well, I mean, it's heartening, Simone, to see how far you've come with recording technology. I mean, as we're speaking, you have your own mic sock now. And it looks, it's great.
Yeah, and I know. It's so super, like...
professional.
It's like PV, PV, like you can buy them from PV.
Ian, I want to say something to you, and I want you to tell me what it conjures for you, okay? I'm going to say something. I'm going to say LS double D cup.
Oh, yeah.
What does that mean to you? What is that?
Well, that's a band. That was like... that was our other band. Simone's my other band, would you say? Oh, no, it wasn't us. I wasn't in that band. What am I talking about? I always dreamed I was in that band, you know, guys?
You don't.
It's such a cool band. And it's hard that anyone ever heard them. Some people who went to the $100 shows would have been to the, also been to the LS Double D Cup shows. I went to some of them.
I thought I'd ask you. I didn't think it would prompt confusion about your membership in the band. That I'm surprised by. You're like, of course I'll proudly tell you about the tenure I had in LS Double D Cup, and then you're like, wait a minute.
I resemble somebody in that band. I get confused with
what was that? What was that band like? Yeah, I didn't know, as with it and hip and cool as I thought I was. All of a sudden, I discover this LS Double D Cup band that I didn't know about. Ian, what was it like to see that band?
Oh, they were amazing. They would, like, dress up. They were always disguised, and they'd dress up in amazing outfits. Like, they were pretty scuzzy, and they'd have, like, screen-printed masks, and it was really wild music, like, kind of, like, psych, punk, surf rock.
Yeah.
With a really wild singer, Rap Words, I think the singer's name was.
Rap Words.
The guy who, the bass player was Abraham Bing Bong, a.k.a. Jamie Hendrix. Jamie Hendrix.
Yeah. There's like Philip K. Vagina was on drums.
Yeah. And
Ian, do you
Our
do
Lady
you
of
have
the Flowers?
That's right, yeah.
Was one of the guitar players.
Are you not related to Abraham Bing Bong in any way? I thought you were.
Well, we both played bass.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought for some reason there was some connection there. Simone, can you tell us all more about LS Double D Cup? It sounds like you might have first-hand knowledge.
Okay, so LS Double D Cup is this band that, like, Ian can't remember being in because it's just a, like, acid trip that a bunch of people had.
We smoked weed so much in that band.
Wait, sorry, which band? Ian, which band are you talking about?
I heard that this band smoked so much weed every practice, every rehearsal, every time they play a show, they always smoke so much weed. So it's okay if nobody
LS Double D Cup, like not $100. You're talking about LS Double D Cup right now, Ian? I just want to clarify.
LS Double D Cup.
Because as far as we know, you are not in LS Double D Cup at all, Ian. Is that correct?
No, Ian just like had a coordinated acid trip with like these other people, and they made this music. But as a result of like the total bliss of making that music, none of them can admit that they were actually in the band, because to do so would cause the need to try to replicate that level of bliss, which is an impossibility at this point in the world. And so this is called compartmentalization. It's a classic thing that happens when something so good happens that, like, you then have to divorce yourself from. So it's cool, like a lot of this is kind of why me and Ian don't talk a lot, because, like, I can't help but tell the truth about something like this. Ian was in that band.
Ian was in the band, just making sure.
Yeah, Ian was in the band, but he can't admit it, because if he did, the rest of his life in comparison would feel like a total piece of shit.
Yeah. Which one's reality? Is it the grayness of today, or the psychedelic tie-dyed brain meld of LSD cup?
LSD cup on its own as a name seems like the result of an acid trip, if I may. And just looking at it, you know, the way it looks graphically, it confuses me. And then to actually say it out loud as many times as I have today, I feel like I'm getting a little woozy. No, that's good. So what's the...
The person who does the art for that is this guy, Michael Como, who's like an incredible artist. I would talk about like analog, like people who remain fairly analog. Michael now has an Instagram, but like as like an amazing printer and like comic book artist, like really didn't take up on social media. And like, yeah, total weirdo. And hilarious, and also just like incredibly talented comic book maker and printer, and did all these works of art that like people always mistake for other people, but like was actually really seminal in like a certain style of printing that like was popular in Toronto. Like a lot of people think that posters for Vaseline, like that big party, the queer party that Will Monroe would throw, were by Will Monroe. But it was actually Michael Como who made those, posters.
I see Michael Como contributed to the liner notes for Forest of Tears. I see that.
That's right.
Michael Como.
Yeah.
So Michael Como, very multifaceted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so what's the status of... we'll leave that at that for now, because I don't even know what to believe anymore. I feel like I'm on an acid trip.
It's true that... Can I say, though? It's true. I've got the word that... In my gray reality, I see that LSD cup is releasing their first record.
That's what I was trying
this
to get
week,
to.
I think.
Yeah, as
yeah.
we're speaking.
Well, you're trying to say what I'm saying.
I was trying to get that. No, I'm sorry, man. I don't mean to trip you out. I was just trying to say that, yeah, I also heard tell of that. And as we're speaking, the people listening to this, this has already happened. LSD cup already exists. They were around. Now they have a release. Ian, did you want to speak to this? I know you got a little fuzziness, or should we defer to Simone?
Oh, when you just said this already happened, I was just like, for the people who are listening, this is happening.
But yeah.
That's what tripped me up.
For those of us like this. In this call right now, this is happening. But the fact that you're saying LSD cup have a new release coming out this week, that's already happened. Because they're hearing this in the future, even though we're in the present. But our present is their past, and now they're in the present and going into the future. Does that make sense?
Yeah, as much as all this stuff can make sense.
Yeah. Like, Simone, what is the deal with this release? How is it coming out, the LSD cup thing? And what does it all mean? Can you tell us a little bit about this recording?
That recording is like a bunch of songs that were recorded by Steve Cato at... Sneaky D's.
Sneaky D's still around? Is Sneaky D's still around?
Yeah, it is. But I mean, I haven't been in there since we recorded that in like 2008, hey, I don't think. Yeah. And it was recorded the same year as Forest of Tears. Mm-hmm. But the music never came out. Not for any reason, except we just didn't really think of it that way. And then I think actually it was recorded on software that... on this program called Sonuti, like, which is iTunes backward, but it was like this old, like, I think open source digital audio interface. And then like we couldn't get the files after a while because it became obsolete as like, you know, new software emerged. So we only had like M4As of those recordings. So Yeah, and like now, that sounds really good, right? It sounds really good. No, but it sounds like...
It does sound good. The recordings do sound good. I like the songs.
Yeah. So those are...
It fits the band. Like, the band was so wild. It's kind of understandable. It would take, whatever it is, 20 years or 15 years to release their record. Hmm.
So releasing meaning
it's fine that they come out on M4A, like from M4A,
right? So
yeah, it's like it's on Bandcamp, and I guess you could probably even get it in like high fidelity, but it's just so you know it's an M4A, So anyways, and it's only on Bandcamp. I mean, I'd like you know if any like hotshot record exec is listening, maybe you want to put it out on vinyl, maybe you want to put it on tape. We'll do that.
Okay.
It'd be great.
We'll do that.
Okay. So
I dare people to listen to it. Muskoka, one of the songs on it, Muskoka, or Driving Miss Disco, and not get it stuck in your head. Because I've had those songs stuck in my head for 15, 20 years. Like, for real. As soon as I hear the riffs, the first riffs of those songs, it's just stuck in my head for a week.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, they're kind of retained in your mind like a flashback might be, right? At any moment,
yes.
LS Double D Cup just hits you again. You're like, oh my God, I thought that was gone. It's back. Is that what happens?
Yeah. Okay. I'm here and I'm there and I'm back.
And is that the only recording that exists of this band?
Yeah, I think. Yeah. I mean, there may be videos of us playing in like art galleries.
We're in a movie.
Yeah, I never saw it though. I couldn't go see it.
This is a movie by Iris Fraser Gudrunas. Mm-hmm. Like, I forget what the movie's called though. Shoot.
Father. Oh my God.
Father of the Bride?
Father Francis.
Father of the Bride.
Father Francis?
No. Father Francis?
Father Francis.
Father of the Bride.
I thought it was Father of the Bride. Aren't you the wedding band? Isn't LS Double D Cup the wedding band and Father of the Bride? I thought
that'd
I heard
be
that.
Amazing. Someone should get married to that band.
Well, this is all lovely. I didn't know about this. So this is a nice little $100 bonus thing, in a way, to discover it for us.
Different band, Vish.
It's a different
John
band.
John Wayne the River, $100, LS Double D Cup. Different
because
band.
Actually, like, in case... I don't want anyone to think that anyone in $100 other than Ian or me could have been in LS Double D Cup. Okay. Because... there's like Hunter, Mikey Berry, Michael Como. Maybe they're going to kill me for telling the world who they actually are. But I'd rather
they
kill
me. And Simone TV later, too.
And Simone TV played in that band, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, I'd rather they kill me than they'd be angry at me.
This is fair.
For not mentioning who they are.
I didn't mean to conflate all the things, but I do think this is a bit of an orbit. Everything's kind of orbiting different people, but something's going on. All I wanted to say is it's lovely that all this is coming out again or for the first time. It means a lot to me, and I'm a little
but
did
bit... Did you like it, Reese?
LSD
Did you like
double
LS,
D-
double, LS Double D Cup? You just listened to it today for the first time.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
You pretty much liked it?
No, I did like it. I do like it, and I want to listen to it again now that I have further context. I do like it a lot. I'm a little surprised by it. I was surprised by how wild it sounded. Some of it reminded me a little of that band, the B-52s. You ever hear tell of them?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know. They collaborated with R.E.M.
Yeah, they have one song with R.E.M. And R.E.M. once collaborated with KRS-One on the same album. That's how eclectic R.E.M. used to be.
I know, Radio Song.
Yeah.
What a good song.
Yeah, it is a good song. I just got out of time on vinyl. Which I never have
now
before.
Our children grow up prisoners all their life. Radio listeners.
That's right.
Remember that?
Yeah, I do. That's KRS-One.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's a song about the radio, but it's against the radio. I can relate.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Listen.
Exactly.
I want to thank you both for strolling down memory lane with me and with each other. It's nice that I could reunite you two after a decade of separation. I want to give you a chance to say anything else that you want to say about $100, Forest of Tears, any other upcoming projects maybe. Actually, let's put a hold on that. Let's stick to this subject matter. Is there anything we haven't covered about Forest of Tears or $100 that you'd like to say in conclusion that I didn't prompt you to say? I feel like I want to go to Simone first on this. And if you have nothing, that's fine. We got to a lot of stuff, but I just want to give you the opportunity. Simone, anything we haven't covered that you want to let people know about?
I don't know. I guess I just like, I don't know why like people like that band in a particular way other than it just being a band in their youth or something like that. Like, I think it's it was a cool band. I think we did good stuff with songs, but it's like, it's interesting. I don't really know. So like, to me, like the notion that I think that there's something to say about it is like pretty, it's like just really funny. But I mean, like, you know, that it's like, ultimately, what do I have to say? Like, I don't know. I have nothing. I don't know what I want to say about it. Because like, I don't, I'm just trying to be like, I don't know. I don't recognize this as a question.
Okay. It's not really, it's an opportunity more than a question.
Yeah. 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 I don't know.
Okay.
Oh, no, what were you going to say? You go.
I'll ask the questions. I was like, what if it was possible, Simone, to listen to Forest of Tears for the first time this year? What do you think your impression would be of it?
I would think it's like very earnest. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was. Yeah.
Isn't that kind of your whole deal, Simone? Earnestness on record and songs, and yet absolute absurdism and silliness and every other aspect of record promotion and discussion?
I don't know, man. I don't know.
There's a thing that you do that I admire, which is you do take the craft very seriously, but everything around it is obviously silly, and you see it for that. Like not that we haven't had good, serious discussions, and we did get to some stuff here, but I appreciate that about you, that I don't know if anything we just talked about for the last hour is true.
Yeah, it's just like kind of like the songs are there, and that's what you do. You like make the songs for them to be there. I like really feel grateful for that in my life, you know?
Yeah.
That you just have like those like little nuggets of like a distilled experience and like effort. I would want to know, like, Ian, like, if you listen to the album for the first time right now, what do you think you would honestly, I would listen to it, I'd be like, why can't that person sing? Like, that's my honest truth. And I don't say that because I'm like, tell me it was good. Like, I know it was. I know what I think of it, and like, no one could change my mind about that. But I'm kind of interested, like, Ian, what would you think when you listen to it?
Yeah. I wonder if I could hear it for the first time. I don't think the singing, I think I would still like the singing, your singing. I don't know what it would be like for me, because I don't know. I have it here, I'm looking at it. You know what? I probably wouldn't, I don't listen to this kind of music much anymore.
Yeah, yeah. You know?
So this is something I love and I'm still so proud of, for sure. And I think it's great. Because I know it, though.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't, like, I don't listen to that much song music anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, songs of, like, this. Like, we are so about songs. And like Simone was saying about how you make a song, like, verse and chorus and all this. But I don't, know if I would.
You're a different person.
I would, yeah. I mean, if someone told me, like, this is really great, listen to it, and it's somebody I trust or whatever, I would listen to it. And I bet I'd be moved by it because, you know, if I could listen to it at the right volume or at the right time of day or whatever, or had a quiet moment. Like, I don't have any time to listen to music anymore. I have two kids who are lovely and loud. And when I put on music, it's mostly just to try and take the energy out of the room. So it's just like plinking pianos.
Interesting.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
But I still think it's a cool record. I'm still proud of it, but yeah, I wouldn't do it again.
Okay.
No, because we already did it.
That's not exactly saying you have no regrets. Well, it's close.
No.
It's there.
I'm so proud of it. Yeah. For real, I'm so proud of it.
You should be.
Absolutely.
You should be.
And I do listen to song music still, and I still listen to all the old song music I used to listen to, and there's still songwriters who I listen to now, you know? Who get their songs in my head or that I come back to.
Yeah.
But yeah,
Let me just flip this question real quick. Say the year is 2023, Ian, and someone foists upon you the opportunity to hear LS Double D Cup for the first time. What would you think?
I'd be like, that's so noisy. But I'd be like, that's pretty fun. Pretty fun stuff.
Okay.
Wild songs, like songs about vacationing and skiing, songs about reality, songs about driving whilst high and being terrified. I'm kind of still into that kind of stuff.
It sounds very illegal, everything that you're describing, most of it, which is fine.
Yeah.
It's dangerous.
Some of it should be, for sure.
Some of it should be.
Yeah.
Simone, should I ask the same question? This is getting silly. Like, what would you think if you first heard LS Double D Cup at this point in your life?
I don't know. Like, I love hearing young punk bands right now. Like, yeah. I'm like, oh, okay, that's what you're thinking about? Because they're just like, it's just still wild and cool. And I don't know. I think it's great. And it also hasn't like changed all that much in another way. So I think that's cool. The quality of the recording, so scrappy. But yeah, I don't know. I kind of feel like something that's interesting about the moment that we were working in is that there wasn't like as $100, like going back to the question of like if there's anything I would like to say, is that like I kept playing music and the presence of feminized people like grew, right? Like there really weren't very many contemporaries. Like sometimes we would go on a tour with a band and if it was Simone, TB and me, we'd be the only feminized people in the venues, you know? And like sometimes we'd play a festival, even like really independent progressive-ish festivals, or we thought they were like progressive because they were independent and not very corporate. Like you would still be like one of three acts on like a 20 band festival that had a feminized person. And so when I think about the culture back then, it was like a bad move to not wear a dress and be a feminized person, you know? And we didn't have the word for non-binary then. And that like distinctly is a time where like, you know, I was around a lot older people who maybe would say that they were feminist, but there was like no talk about consent culture. Yeah. There was no talk about like, it was like feminism was like, we were like post-feminism or something, you know, like it was like not, it was like apparently not an issue, but there's like just such a disgusting culture at the time. And so I think like a lot of the music and a lot of the themes of the music is like about that stuff and is about, it's a feminist album and it's like a queer album in this moment in time when I don't think that was particularly cool. And there's like an aspect to which because like all the other people were like men in the band, so we were like cool, but it's kind of like funny because I don't think that like on my own people would have wanted to hear that me sing those songs,
right.
And there's something about having had that backing,
right,
that was like probably allowed me to travel in certain ways. But you know, like you go and you'd rip a show and it would be like just people acting totally vile to this music about domestic rape. Or like go on like Gian Gomeshi's show, like on CBC Radio Q with Gian Gomeshi, and like he can't ask you, like he won't ask you what the songs are about.
No.
Because like he doesn't want to actually have to deal with that. And I think that was like a really different culture. So in a lot of ways, like I remember having to be incredibly explicit about what the songs were about if I wanted to feel as if I wasn't being ignored.
Yeah.
Otherwise, like I could just be like, yeah, I'm just playing a country band, whatever. And, but yeah, it was pretty weird. And like we never said it was interesting. And then at the same time, I know like there's an entire fan base of people who that's what actually resonated with them. They're trans people. Mm-hmm. They're women. Mm-hmm. They're queers. They're like, oh, that's our music. Those songs are about our experiences. And so I think that's like important to name. And I think it's like funny that I name it again. That is me naming it again. But like that is what it is. And I like meet younger feminized musicians now. I meet women and like non-binary musicians, and they can't imagine that there was pressure to wear a dress. They can't like imagine that it would have been weird to not brush your hair, or that you would have been like given the like up and down in a particular way.
Yeah.
That's not to say that they're not dealing with like a whole range of other pressures around thinness, around like being real, like all these ridiculous pressures about how to look.
Yeah.
But I think like just that at the time it was like so like undiverse, and we were like almost always playing like festivals and venues where there's like not any racialized like musicians playing too. Yeah. So that racial segregation was also really, really like a thing at the time.
Yeah.
I just think back on that time as like not one that I wish to be in again in that sense, because like it was pretty alienating and pretty difficult. And there weren't like easy ways of talking about it. It was like, it was always like really radical to talk about what was on one's mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like that was really alienating. So maybe that's like part of why I don't really remember any of it.
Maybe, yeah. You know? So hard. Yeah. Just, I feel like that's, I think you said it, but that's why I think it means so much to so many people, because it was this like bro band, like Beers and Bros kind of, we'd play those kind of shows and that kind of stuff. And it was just like this country rock kind of stuff. But it was like the music, the lyrics are like insane, like rage and like beautiful, like awesome, like analyzing and just awesome representation and all this stuff. That's, it meant so much to so many people, because it's like, whoa, what are they singing about? Like, it was awesome. It meant, it was like sneaking in with a, you know, country bro band, but then having all this to say. It was pretty special.
It is a testament to, like, I appreciate what you're saying about that time and place, and I can concur. I was there, and I appreciate what you're saying, and I hope I didn't have a hand in making any of those environments troubling. And as a show booker or whatever, I was trying to be mindful of some things. But yeah, sorry, not to make this about me. All I want to say is I think it's a testament to you that songs like Careless Love and Hell is a Place and Tirade of a Shitty Mom in particular, but I mean, it's true of all of these songs. They're timeless, sadly. They're sadly still relevant, and people are more, I don't know if anything's improved, but at least people are seem to be more open to discussing such things.
It's interesting to like actually ponder that question, like, are things any different, and like what can we know, and also like what happens when people feel compelled or like hit the limit of what it is to just be able to say something but nothing changes, right? So like in a way at that moment we had like, it wasn't as if like we were the first people to be writing that stuff, right? There's all these like different moments of feminism and like radical politics in countries, just that we watched like the pendulum swing back and forth. So we were coming out of a time where it was just like simply not cool to be political. And so you like, people would self-censor. They'd be like, we're not going to talk about like stuff. But there were like certain things that no one talked about like all that openly in mainstream. And often I would find like, if you tried to broach it, people wouldn't, like, interviewers wouldn't know what you're talking about. Like, if talk about, like, settlerism or something like that, like, people were like, what? And it was, like, not a given in a lot of, like, dominant Canadian culture that this is, like, a colony that we're in.
Yeah.
Whereas now, you say that and people are like, oh, yeah. And so we were also, like, you know, later on writing with that consciousness, because we were really fortunate to know different people who were, like, in Indigenous sovereignty movements, and like, those are just people and movements that we knew. And so we learned a lot, I think, culturally. Yeah. I'm saying we. Sorry, Ian, but I feel like you were there together. And, like, we learned a lot in that way. So it was just the reality of what we knew our place was in the world. But that was also just, like, if you said that, people were like, we don't know how to do that. You just watch that get redacted in an article or like an interview. And I wouldn't say that is like that felt like censorship at the time. Well, for sure. And I don't know if it is, but it, like, that's what it felt like. So it's interesting now because, like, anyone can say anything almost. And but I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if that, like, gets at the systemic change. But what an amazing moment in another way to be writing at a time where it felt radical simply to be saying something. And now the task is so much harder because it isn't just about voicing something. It's about thinking, how and can this change? You know,
I think there's probably more of a connection to, I invoked timelessness earlier, but I think part of that is married to being ahead of your time. And I don't mean to foist that upon you in your band, but you were talking about things that not a lot of people were at the time. And some of them you were still learning about. Some of them, I imagine, were as plain as day to you and no one else was willing to see them. And now here we are. So I think it is a testament to you both and the things you wanted to express in this band. And again, going back to about an hour ago when we were talking about intentionality, maybe that wasn't your intention, but it was true to you. These were things you wanted to talk about. So whatever anyone else made of them or processed, it was true to you. And so once again, I pay tribute to you and say thank you for doing that on one hand. And also,
I just want to argue with you because I think that a lot of people were saying them, but they just didn't have access. And so there's like a possibility that I had access to an audience because of how I looked and, you know, because of whiteness, because of like being flanked by all these bros. And so I had entry to say things that other people were saying, but just like didn't have the audience to say it to in the same way or didn't have the same audience.
No, that's fair. So that's a fair, a fair argument and a counterpoint. What I'm saying is you did use your privilege and your, I don't know. I want to be careful with this because you're going to yell at me. I can feel it coming. A little bit of yelling at Vish. But I'm just going to say, like, I think you were self-aware of the fact that you would have a platform and you were in a milieu that wasn't really dealing with some of these issues or thoughts. And I think that's what you chose to do with it. If I'm going to be part of this scene or reach this audience because of who I am, what I look like, I'm going to try to say something meaningful here, maybe on behalf of those who can't or aren't being heard. And I know you have issues with that too, what that means, white savior complexes and whatnot. But I just want to say, as I was reading this, the lyrics today and listening to this record today, what we're talking about did occur to me. Like, Jesus, this is heavy stuff, but it's stuff it's become a little bit normalized to express this and hear this now on some small level, not enough. And I think the fact that it's 15 years old is something of a testament to you both and what you wanted to do with this band. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't mean to shut you up. I just want to say that I know that I'm trying to pay you a compliment, but I also know it can be uncomfortable because you're whatever. My point here is this. We got to wrap up. What? Do you have more to say? You got to say something? I always put my foot in my mouth at the end. I said something good, and then I say something wrong. That's what I think happens with Vish. And at 1.75 speed, it blows by. You don't even hear me mangle the English language as much. I want to wrap this up, but do you want to say something to what I just said, Simone?
No. I just like that. I thought it was funny. I mean, I hope everyone listens to this at like 0.05 because embedded in the audio is like an entirely other interview, but you can only hear it at 0.5. So
yeah,
the truth.
Yeah. We're actually talking to our dog audience right now. Any dogs out there? It's you're going to hear this on a different frequency. My point is, I want to give you both a chance now for plugs. We've been focused forever now on $100 and this history. Anything coming up? Anything you're doing now you want people to know about? Ian, if so, can you direct people to websites or things where they can access what you're up to these days?
For me, I put out a guitar record a couple years ago during the start of the pandemic called In Light. And I've got more music to record, but it's going to be slow. My musical output has slowed a lot since having a family. I can't believe people who have kids and still, I mean, I have a full-time job and kids. And so the time for making, writing and recorded music so slim, but I love that people can do it. And I can't. I do it really slow. So I have more music to come out. But I'll probably put it out under my name.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you.
Simone is very
In Light is a really beautiful record. I'm just going to say that. People should listen to it, obviously.
I think I owe Ian an email about that record.
Music.
Did you email me about that record, Ian, when it came out?
I emailed you and maybe one other person for my PR kind of for
I'm
that
sorry.
Record because I really hate that kind of stuff. I know everyone does, but I just really just didn't do anything for it except for emailed you on like the day. I was like, hey, Visha, I'm releasing this record today. Would you want to listen to it and interview me? And you were like, well, I'd love to. But I think you did email. You were like, oh, I'd love to, but I don't remember what you said, but we definitely didn't
I'm
do
sorry.
It.
I'm sorry. Yeah, this is making...
No sweat.
Someday you'll be on the show, Ian. That's my promise to you.
Oh, that'd be fun.
We can figure out a way to get you
without
on...
Without Simone?
If we can get you on this podcast
without
somehow...
Simone
yeah, with or without Simone, it doesn't matter. But someday you will be on this show. Mark my words. Heed what I say, Ian. It's going to happen. All right, no, I'm sorry about that, and I will link to your record so people can, for what it's worth, so they can hopefully check it out, the Enlight record. Simone, where to begin with you? What's going on? What's coming up? These sorts of things.
I don't know. I don't know.
Is there anything? Are you working on something you can tell us about or no?
Yeah, I'm always working on songs. There's always just a song rattling around, except for 2 years there was no songs. And so then all I did was like I worked on this soundtrack for a movie called A More Radiant Sphere by Sarah Wiley. And it's just like a really short little recording that came out of that. There are five songs with words, but all the words are by a poet called Joe Wallace, who is a really unknown like communist poet who was like derided for being terrible at poetry. And so the songs are like the filmmaker is making this film about this guy who's been erased from the archive, the historical record. And so I, took his, five poems of his and made them into song. And then I play them with like Nick Dorado and John Showman, both who have like played on other records of mine. John Showman's the fiddle player on Audible Songs from Rockwood, and Nick Dorado's the piano and sax player on Fiverr in the Atlantic School of Spontaneous Composition and You Want a Country. But like, yeah. And then the second side of that album, because it's a tape, is all just instrumental music from the soundtrack, which is really nice to listen to. Nathan Doucette, who's a drummer, is... Mm-hmm. Yeah, on that. And then we are putting out, me and Nate are putting out this really disgusting electronic music under the name Splitter.
Ah.
And
Splitter.
So, yeah. I mean, that'll come out. So
I've heard it's awesome.
Nate's like really good at beats. So
okay.
That's like maybe the first kind of electronic music that I've recorded and will be putting out. Ever. Not that I've made. I record a lot of stuff, but don't put it out. So that's that. And I'm just going to play a live festival because I haven't been playing during the pandemic. I don't want to get long COVID. But I'll be playing Sappy Fest this year, which is really cool.
Oh, nice.
And I'll be playing with Nathan Doucette and Bianca Palmer, both on drums, and Jeremy Costello on like the bass and keys.
Hmm.
Jeremy Costello of Special Costello, in case anyone has ever missed me plug a band. It's always Special Costello. he's so good. So that they're like, I think that'll be, it's just fun. I'm working on music with them right now. And so I think we'll probably have an album out in the next few years.
Oh, nice.
The songs are there. Yeah, it'll be good.
Well, this is great. Yeah. I'm glad to hear you're both doing stuff. Ian, it's been a long time since I've heard of you doing things, at least relatively speaking, compared to Simone. So thank you for sharing that info with us.
Sure.
If people want to learn more about Forest of Tears and this reissue, I don't know if there's copies left. Simone, do you know where to direct people?
Yeah, go to the Blue Fog Recordings Big Cartel thing.
Yeah.
And you can order it there, or you can go to the Blue Fog Recordings Bandcamp.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think that, Vish, you should link it because it might actually be Blue Fog Records and not recordings.
Yeah, yeah.
Honestly, don't know.
Sure, I'll link to it. No problem. I think there's still copies of the reissue out, though. Available, rather.
I think so. I haven't been checking. I don't run it.
Hope so.
Big thank you to Brian Taylor for making that stuff happen. And I know Rick White remastered it and they made a whole new jacket.
Yeah.
For the inside. And they didn't tell me about it until I got it. And I was like, whoa, wow.
Can I get this photo that I'm showing you two right now for the promotional aspects of this podcast?
Yeah, yeah. I can send that to you.
It's nice. I like it. You all look great, if I might say. Okay, yeah. Cool.
Well, you look high. Like, Ian looks so high in it because Ian is so high in it. He looks so high.
Is there any chance you were high?
There's a chance.
Yeah. You look kind of high. Yeah. I'm just showing everyone. I'm zooming in.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. If we can go out on a song by either LS Double D Cup or $100. First of all, put that option out. I wonder if one of you can pick one for us to go out on, and then the other one can argue with both me and that person about the choice. And then we'll have another half an hour conversation about what song we end up playing. Ian, I'm going to go to you on this first. If you could pick one song by either project, it can only be one. Please pick one and tell us why it came to mind.
Okay.
I think we should probably do $100. I was kind of, what do you think? Okay.
Maybe, yeah. What if Simone and I say it the exact same time?
All right.
Would that impress you?
I'm going to count backwards from three. And after one, you both say your song selections at the same time. And we'll see what happens. Ready? Are you both ready?
Yeah.
Okay. You know the song titles? Here we go. 3, 2, 1, go.
14 Hours.
Careless Love is the only one I remember. Yeah, 14-hour day. Do 14-hour day. Yeah, 14-hour day.
When
do
I listened
one.
To it again, I got teared because those, you know, that one and Marbodar, they're just so good. They're so, I heard them again in a new way when I listened to them. And I don't know. It just, I can really imagine the characters. I don't
14-hour day is it's a wonderful song and narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm taken right into this world. So, I think there was some chicanery. I don't know if this was a clear choice between the two of you. I feel like one of you picked a different song, but I'm going to let that pass. I think maybe there was also some level of consensus. So I think we should just play it. Let's play 14-Hour Day. Are we agreed?
Yeah. Yeah, let's hear it again for the first time.
Okay. 14-Hour Day by the great $100. This from their album Forest of Tears, which has been repressed on vinyl, as we've established. Hopefully you know that by now. You've been listening this whole time. Ian, Simone, for what it's worth, I love you both, and I thank you for this time. It means a lot to me, and I'm sure other people who love you and your band. So thank you for this, and I wish you the best luck in the future. Thanks.
Thanks so much. Love you too, Vish. Love you, Simone. Love you, everybody who's listening.
Love
Surprise
you,
love.
All love. Only love.
All love.
Nights like weeks in Timmins, you work out and go to bed eyes wide awake and burn you in my mind. I'd burn you in my mind. Your sooty boots would stain the stairs up to our front door. You'd made it through another night and come home in the morn. You'd come home in the morn. And it would be nice like to lay me down with you, and it'd be nice like boss man, so foreman you became. You made it up the ladder to work a 14-hour day. You would work a 14-hour day. in with the can they left you, a pack of 12 you drank, to get you through the beat down of those post-war thoughts you think, yeah, those post-war thoughts you think. Oh, and it would be a nice night to lay me down with you, yeah, it'd be a nice night, it'd be a nice night to lay me down with you, yeah, it'd be a nice night. Here in the mattress beside me where you lay, I can't bear to lie here. Oh, I weep my night away. You know I weep my night away. I'll grab that shovel, darling, march up to your grave, dig a hole right next to yours, and next to you I'll stay. Yeah, next to you I'll stay. Oh, and it'll be a nice night to lay me down. It'll be a nice night. It'll be a nice night to lay me down with you, yeah. It'll be a nice night.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, it was lovely to have Ian and Simone on the show for a good long chat about $100. I mean, there's no debating whether or not it was long. I think we can all agree on that. But was it good? To each their own. I thought it was fun. I hope they had a good time, and I hope you enjoyed listening to us have a chat on this, the 787th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available wherever you get your podcast, pretty much. If you can't find an episode that you've heard about and you're looking for it, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit vishkana.com. You can like Creative Control on Facebook or follow the show on Twitter for now at vishcreative. Or you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at vishkana. And I'm on that Blue Sky thing now. It's just vishkana that, whatever, the blue, there's a whole stuff at the end. It's the, I'm just myself, but at the Blue Sky thing. So if you want, you can follow me there, I guess. I don't know. I don't know what the hell we're doing. We're adults. Follow me on this. Follow me on that. What's wrong with us? What happened to us? This is for another time. I'm going to stop talking about this. Please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to sustain this podcast and all the rants I go on at the end of each episode. $6 American or more a month grants you access to exclusive content. You get episodes earlier than everybody else who doesn't give me anything. Sons of... No, just kidding. No, you know, you get a little premium. You get the shows earlier and other stuff too. And if you're interested in receiving a Creative Control t-shirt, I still have some sizes left in the maroon and the yellow. So if you go to the Patreon, you'll know what that means. The designs are up there. And yeah, just message me on Patreon at patreon.com/creativecontrol, and we'll see if we can't get you set up with a shirt for your generosity. Thank you so much. Thanks again to Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, for their in-kind support for this show. I want to thank my friend Jim Guthrie for letting me use music of his on the show every week. You can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you so much for listening to this episode with Ian and Simone from $100. I love those two people, and I love their band. It's so nice to hear their debut album, Forest of Tears, again by Blue Fog. So thanks to them for doing that. And again, thanks to you for subscribing to this podcast and following it and telling your friends to do the same and to spread the word about the show. It means a lot. So I just got sad about Rick Froberg again, and I'm going to wrap this up. I will talk to you very soon. I hope you're well. Hug the ones you're with, if you will. Talk to you soon. Bye for now.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.